Yisrael was Kedei Sheyiftechu B'Hashem. That the main purpose of the giving of the Torah to Klal Yisrael was in order for us to have Bitochen. That's really what everything is all about. The mitzvahs are an expression of Bitochen because I trust Hashem. I do so many things. I don't do so many things. In business, I have so many rules and regulations, which, you know, Torah rules and regulation. It's all because I trust Hashem that I have to do what's right. In the days when people worked on Shabbos, I trusted Hashem by closing my business, you know, even though Shabbos was the big market day. But so everything is about trust in Hashem. And that's really the tachlis of everything. But we have some other serious issues too, which are related. In a sense, you could say, you know, if trust in Hashem is so important, I'll just trust in Hashem and I won't be mechanech my children. You know, trust Hashem will take care of everybody. Children, grandchildren. I don't have to daven for them. I trust Hashem. And we know that there's something wrong with that. The simplest fallacy there is that there's a mitzvah, there's a chiyuv of chinuch, and we have to do our obligations. One cannot trust Hashem enough that I don't have to do his mitzvahs. You know, that's I don't know what that is. That's very, very foolish. Probably a lot worse than that. So we do have these serious concerns today about our children. And I'd like to suggest that especially when it comes to emunah and bitochen, emunah being the basic belief system or knowledge, we call it, because the Torah says, V'yodato hayoim, v'ashivo yisrael v'avecho, ki Hashem hu Elokim, we say it three times a day in Orleinu. It's a knowledge, we know Hashem, but when it comes to emunah, and then bitochen, of course, the emotional ability to rely and follow and not be nervous about anything because everything is all in Hashem's hands. When it comes to those things, we sometimes tend to take too much for granted. And we sort of rely on assumptions which are oftentimes fallacious, mistaken. They're not necessarily true. And this is not just true in the world of parents. This is true in the world of educators as well. When it comes to actions, it's a little bit easier. You could see a kid who's going through the right actions to a certain extent. Parents a little more, the school together. If the parents in the school are collaborating, then they get a certain picture. You know, today, with the easy, instant access to everything else out there, you can't get a full picture, but you have some idea, you know. That's when it comes to actions. When it comes to what's going inside, when it comes to what the Chovas HaLevavos calls, he says there's two types of responsibilities. There's the Chovas HaEvorim, the obligations that our physical body is obligated in, and the Chovas HaLevavos, the obligations of the heart. Comes to the obligations of the heart, it's very, very hard to judge. And there, it's prone to taking too much for granted. Compound that by the fact that when it comes to Yahdus, when it comes to understanding and recognizing, believing, if you will, knowing Hashem and His attributes, and knowing the emotions, the feeling of the trust and confidence that we could place in Him, when it comes to these things, it becomes very difficult because of the fact that there's so many infinite levels. And even if we see a certain minimal level, well, yeah, he says, my kid says he believes in God, and he believes in Torah, and he believes in this, he believes in that, and he knows, yes, of course, Hashem does everything, and I have to trust Hashem. That could be lip service, that could be skin deep, that could be a little bit deeper, that could be a little bit deeper, that could be a little bit deeper, and that could be infinitely deep, and it's endless, because anything that has to do with Hashem and Ruchnius and eternity is infinite, by definition. And that's where we get confused sometimes. Because if we don't know how deeply rooted these feelings and belief systems are, We don't know how strong they are. We don't know how they will measure up against the challenges of life. And we don't know how long-lasting they are or how temporary or fleeting, even if we can rely on the fact that what they say on the surface can be taken as true. So we have a serious, serious problem in evaluating and not taking too much for granted. Now, we all know that the depth of any appreciation, any concept, any commitment, any feeling is commensurate, or has to be commensurate, with the challenge that we're facing. The greater the challenge, the deeper that sense of emunah and bitochon has to be in order to be able to face the challenge. You know, when everything is wonderful, like the guy says, he has bitochon, everything's great. He has $100 million in the bank, and he has bitochon, that he's no problems, everything is fine, trust Hashem. You know, and you hear that a lot, you know. And that's, you know, but when that bank account gets down to minus numbers, let's see if he's singing the same song, or was it a song, or was it real? And that's where the test comes in. So it's a very difficult parsha to be able to evaluate where we're holding with our children. Even with ourselves it's difficult, but there we have some sense. But certainly with our children, with others, and to be careful not to take too much for granted. I would suggest, just from my own experiences, that it's very hard to measure. The answer is not searching for measuring tools. The answer is not searching for tests that can measure the extent, the depth of emunah, the depth of bitochen, because those tests are like a lot of other tests that we take today. You know, they're very faulty. You know, you can... And first of all, you could cheat on those tests. But besides cheating, just the evaluation system is not there. It's not real. You can't test it. And therefore, it seems to me that the only security that we can have in this issue is to implant and instill and inspire and educate and through our influence, to deepen those realizations and those commitments more and more on an ongoing, endless basis, in order to assure the maximum level of commitment and the maximum capability of being able to withstand the challenges. We spoke a little bit. I know I mentioned at one point, we must have mentioned the pasuk v'yodata hayoyim ha'shevoyisel avodecho. We discussed this, that Moshe Rabbeinu is giving his farewell speech. And he's standing in front of the whole Klal Yisrael after 40 years of leading them in the Midbar. He's talking to a nation who had experienced the greatest of miracles in Mitzrayim and in the Yam Suf and in the Midbar. They just ate man for breakfast that day. They were, if it was daytime, the speech, they were covered in central air with the Ananiya covered. If it was evening, they were covered with the Amud Esh and heated with the fiery cloud, whatever that was. So these are people who lived a life of miracles. They saw in the Yam Suf Mashal Oiro Yecheskel Anovi Bin Vosei, the lowliest of them. So you're talking to the great of the greats, the most knowledgeable people that ever existed, the Dor Deo. And he tells them, after reviewing with them everything that they witnessed, everything that they saw, what they saw in Mitzrayim, what they saw, what they heard Hashem speaking at Har Sinai, everything. And he says, V'yodato hayoyim, know it this day. Of course you know it. We know it. This is not even, belief is something that we choose to accept as truth. Knowledge is something that we know. Return it to your heart that Hashem is God. What? Return? Who could lose it? What? The Targum says, means to return. What's going on over here? There it says that even on the level, the highest level, that's not the level we are, that's not the level our children are, that's not the level that even the previous generations that we may have touched and seen were on. On the highest level of the Dor Deo, who literally firsthand experienced all of these miraculous experiences, they have to return it every day to their heart, because it's so easy to forget. The impetus to forget, the desire to forget is so great. The Sahara works so hard. The temptations, the restrictions, the limitations, they force us to want to, I want to forget. If I focus on Hashem, you know how constricting that is? I can't touch this, I can't eat this, I can't do this, I can't do that. I must do this, I must do this, I must do that, I must do that. I don't want to scare anyone and send anyone off the derech. But yes, this is the world in which we live. And mimela, it's necessary to return it every day, because the Yetzer Hara tries to block it out, to blind us, to cloud it. I'm sure I mentioned, speaking about this Rav in Brooklyn, who told me many years ago, he used to leave his Rosh Hashiva's picture on the desk when he wanted to bottle or talk Lashon Hara or something, just put the picture face down. We do that to Hashem. And our children are doing that even more than we're doing that. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's a toss-up. But we're all doing that, okay? We're all doing that. We all do that. And Mimela, we have to do something to help them in this process of Hashivoiso, to give them the tools, to give them the arguments, to give them the inspiration, to give them the emotions, to give them the feelings, so that they should be able to perform this process. That at least it should be a battle between the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. At least there should be a contest, because otherwise, you know, the Yetzer Hara wins. And it's forgotten, and so we have to really implant deep-rooted emotional, intellectual realization and emotional feeling in order to assure that this process will succeed and be successful. So I would like to, in the time that we have, just highlight some of what I think, just from my experience, some of the basic points that we have to develop, and you know, there's something that's still worthy of expanding in the future, and maybe even you know, the good news is today that there's a lot that's written. If we know what we're looking for, there's a lot of material that we could reference. So, okay, I think the very first, most fundamental foundation is a realization of the active participation of Hashem in our lives in a positive way. The Chesed Hashem, the Hashgocha Protis. And again, like I'm sure, you know, we've been talking a lot over the last months, so I'm sure I mentioned the story that I feel in my family, that my children got a very deep, solid, fundamental sense of Hashem's involvement. That happened when we were living in Los Angeles, and it was a summer evening, and my oldest daughter, must have been 7 or 8 at the time, had to go to a day camp the next day, and she asked me for 75 cents to buy a soda. I didn't have 75 cents. I'm not even embarrassed about it. I didn't have 75. I was doing good things there. I didn't have money. Fine. You know, so I didn't have the 75 cents. So she said, what should I do? So I said, you should say Tehillim. So she looked at me a little bit like, you know, didn't really make sense to her. But okay, she's a good kid. She sat down with her younger sister and they're saying a few kapitlach Tehillim. And all of a sudden she says, I don't know. And said, it's 10:30 at night. Tomorrow morning I have to leave the house at 7:30. You don't have the money. What's going to happen? What's this all about? And the little kid says, maybe somebody will think to give you some nonsense. Okay, she went. She didn't have the money. She came home. This was the summer. 6 months ago, approximately 5 months, whatever it was, 6 months, Purim time, a friend of hers had borrowed 75 cents. That morning she woke up and she remembered that she didn't pay her, and she never paid her back, and she brought the money to camp. This story, which carried in it two major ingredients. Number one, you pray. Number two, he responds. Now, he doesn't necessarily respond in words. He responds in actions. And he responds in very mysterious ways. He has a friend who borrowed money 5 months ago, wake up in the morning, puts a thought in her head that this she never paid back that 75 cents, which they had never discussed the whole time, they all forgot about it, and she's coming to camp with the 75 cents that they prayed for the night before. So this story has a lot of very, very exciting ingredients, but that has to be the foundation. We have to find such things. We have to point out such things. And I have found over the years that when we point out the reality of Hashgacha Pratis, our kids begin to discover. We all begin to discover it, and that's the first point. They must see Hashem's active role in their lives. Off the record, if you have to orchestrate something, you know, I couldn't orchestrate one like this, but you know, I don't know, but. They have to have such experiences. And they're there. They're available. They're happening all the time. The problem is, open your eyes. Return it to your heart. It's there.
When we were kids, when I was a kid, somebody put out, one of these big writers put out these Hashgacha Pratis books. They were around in school. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen one of my kids bring it home yet. If you're saying it's such a fundamental truth to raising your kids, why is this?
I don't know.
Prevalent.
I don't know. I remember when that came out, those booklets that you're talking about. I remember I was here in a local school, and I gave it out. And the one kid that won was the kid who was the most difficult in the whole school, and it changed his life. And he came in with a story, a personal story about how they got out of the Holocaust, and it blew everyone's mind. He was the number one. There was a $100 prize, and he won. And so, I don't know, 100%, I don't have an answer for that. We try to do it. We have to try to do it. If they don't do it in the schools, then they have to do it in the family. It has to be done.
Same, but we don't see it in the schools.
Right? Well, all right, so listen. Well,
it's like saying olive babies in the morning. Well, what's the question?
Anyway, but you're right. It's a valid point, but we have to deal with it. That's number one. Number one. Okay. Now, included in this is tefillah, and its effectiveness, and Hashem's hashgacha. Now, there's something else that's very important. The abundance, or let's put it better, the establishment of a track record of Hashem's chesed is very critical. Because we don't know at which point in life, hopefully it shouldn't be, but practically speaking, it always happens, that this will be tested, that there will be some challenge, some problem, some illness, some tragedy, something. And that is not, I won't say it's too late, it's never too late, but that's not the optimum time to train them in Hashem's chesed. So this has to be not just Hashgacha Pratis, but Hashem, it emanates from Hashem's chesed, Hashem's love of Klal Yisrael, Hashem's love of every individual Jew. All of these things have to be just like Shgura Befinu. This is the way we live. They can't just hear lectures, they have to feel it, they have to see it in action. They have to see that we live this way. They have to see that we have that connection. They have to hear the Shem Hashem, that it's a regular part of our speech, but not just speech, that is part of our emotions, that it's real, that we feel it. If they see us getting too upset about something, then that's a question. What are you getting so upset about? There's a God in the world. He's in charge. He does everything for the good. Very, very important to give this concept over. Now, as kids get older, and this is the scary part, unless they had enough of this, in other words, I guess in their mother's milk and in every aspect and every dimension of their development, at some point they become a little more intellectual and they start to have questions. Now, the stronger this foundation is of Hashem, Hashem's involvement, Hashem's love, the less questions there are. Why? Because, like that, there was a famous, I forgot her name, a woman, a Holocaust survivor. She used to lecture about it, maybe she still does, about the Holocaust. And they would ask her, you know, everybody has the same question, where was God during the Holocaust? She says, right here by my side. That's why I'm here today. You know, as he was where with me the whole time. You know, They have to have that sense. And if the more that they have that sense, the more they will be prepared to face the difficulties, and the less questions will come up. Because he's here. What do you mean? How do I know? How do you know? There's a God. He's right here. Well, if there's a God right here, and he does all these wonderful things, and okay, so how do I know he gave you the Torah? Okay, so there's a question. But the question is mild, because I have this relationship with him. In fact, even just on that relationship alone, a person can understand as follows. Hashem does infinite chesed. I've experienced from age 2 to age 10. I don't know when they start getting intellectual. Today, maybe 6. I don't know, whatever it is. From age 2 to age 7, age 8, age 9, I've experienced Hashem in my life so intensely, so extensively, so overwhelmingly, so consistently that, you know, and I have any questions, they're really, what do you mean? They're very, very minimal. And even if I have a question, a person such as that can understand the following. So, you know, I'm a smart kid, I know a lot, they're saying, but they were smarter people than I was. They were geniuses, Torah geniuses. The Jews are the biggest geniuses in the world. More Nobel Prizes than anybody else, you know. And their minds of nobody ever called us stupid Jew. You know, it's the one thing they never called us. You know, so, and then if all these people weren't bothered by my questions, they had answers to my questions, maybe when I get a little bit older, I'll have an answer too. And that can satisfy a person who has a relationship. But if we don't have some type of relationship, or to the extent that our relationship is weak, it's to that extent that that answer is not as satisfying. I remember as a kid, I'm not embarrassed to say this, I was about 15 years old, and I saw all of a sudden, one day I woke up and I said, I know what happened, I've seen it. Very nice, but I don't know, I started to get nervous. I had just read a brief biography of the Vilna Goin. Just like I finished a few days before. It was during the summer, I remember. And I said, you know, I don't know, but the Vilna Goin was smarter than anybody I ever heard of. And he must have had all these questions. And he remained the Vilna Goin. And so did all these other great people. That should be enough for me for now. I waited till my time, 16, 17 already. It was, you know, there was no questions. But maybe 18, I don't know, not sure. But that can only work. And the confidence of other people. My parents are so sure. My grandparents are so sure. My teachers are so sure. That can only work when I have some context and some relationship with Hashem, when I have some positive feelings. Because if I don't have the positive feelings, first of all, I haven't identified him. And second of all, I'm really not motivated to accept that he exists. And motivation is the key to everything, in all of our beliefs, in all of our knowledge, in all of our intellectual decisions that we have to make. If I have such a sense of his kindness and his chesed and what he's done for me and what he does for my life and how he's involved and everything else, then I have a high level of motivation. Of course, I don't want him to disappear off the face of the earth. I don't want to deny him away. I need him. I want him. He's an active and beneficial part of my life. So that's, I think, very important for the next step. However, to the degree that that is not in its fullest, we do have to be able to discuss certain intellectual things. And here's where I think I never really read it, but I'm told that Rabbi Avigdor Miller has, in some of his works, where he talks about the Neflois HaBriya, and the just amazing things that go on in creation, and even what his stuff is probably old. What they find today is, someone told me that they made a mock-up of one cell, the activities going on in one cell, and they say that it paralleled the activities going on in the whole New York City in Manhattan, electricity and the transportation and the buildings and the this and that. I mean, someone showed it to me. I didn't understand exactly what was going on there, but like, it's so. The more that we have to, but any way that we could show them, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand in the Bria, how this creation couldn't be by accident. Not to raise the question, oh, maybe there was evolution. those words, don't introduce them until they, but in, and in general, with that and with everything, answer them before the question is asked. Provide enough information and inspiration that when the questions will be asked, it's a joke. Well, this doesn't bother me. I see the Nifloyus Habere. I see a world that that you see design. And the Chavis HaLevovos goes into this. I mean, we've been doing this since the time of the Kadmonim. But just the design of the world. And point it out. And show. And share with them. And maybe there are kids' books about the Nifloyus Habere. I'm not updated with these things. But all of that. And they get into this. So here they have this positive relationship with Hashem. And here they know how much he's involved in the world. And then they see him, they feel him b'chush. They see his besides his human interaction, they see his interaction with the Bria, with the creation. And this gives that sense of... So now they have the personal, they have the general, they have the motivation. And then at some point... and I don't know, there are people who do know the best ages for the best intellectual concepts. I don't really know that. But at some point, I would say, I usually say around the fifth grade, maybe they're intellectually enough to begin the process. They have to hear and know and understand how confident we are in the knowledge of what happened at Har Sinai. Because without Har Sinai, all of this stuff doesn't have a context. There's a creation. Well, what's the purpose? I don't know. That Hashem's involved in the world, does all this chesed. Well, why? Do we have any obligations? Does he expect anything of us? Well, I don't know. Well, what's he doing this for? Well, he has nothing better to do. Like, what's it? I don't know. So they have to have this sense of there was a Maimon Har Sinai. Now, Maimon Har Sinai also cannot be taken in a vacuum. And maybe this is the best place to do it. We have that age-old educational format, which is the most amazing educational format that exists. That's the Pesach Seder. V'higadeto lebincho, mamish, that design is something that the world has not yet the beginning now to recognize. The value of interactive learning and all of these things, they're beginning to come around. You know, they build now, they don't build big lecture halls anymore. They build little study, seminar rooms, you know, in schools. They're all downsizing because it's all about interactive learning. It used to be 2,000 people sit in the lecture hall, you know what I mean? And the microphone wouldn't work, you know. But today, because people, so the Seder is that. Question, answer, discussion, props. It's not just tell me, you know what Ben Franklin said, tell me I forget, show me I'll remember, involve me I'll understand. The Seder has all three. It has the sipur, it has the showing, here, ho lachmo anyo, here's the moro, here's the this, the karpas, the charoises, the showing, it's show and tell, it's vivid, it's real, tangible, and it's interactive. Forth, question, answer. The whole night just arguing, and tremendous opportunity. So it's very important that they understand that the Seder, what do they have to get out of it? The Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo is very helpful for this. But what do they have to get out of it? They have to get out of it that there were millions of eyewitnesses, both Jew and non-Jew, that witnessed the upheaval of creation. The way I like to say it, and everybody has his own style, I like to say it like this. Adam Rishon slept late and missed the show. He was created at the end of the sixth day. Therefore, there was never an eyewitness to creation. Because the first man was created, it's not his fault that he slept late, but he was created when everything was completed. He was the last stage in the creation. And until Yetzias Mitzrayim, nobody really saw. Avraham Avinu discovered Hashem. He said, "Mi bava bira, there has to be a creator." He didn't see that hashgocha protis that they saw in Mitzrayim. He didn't see the nisim gluyim that they saw in Mitzrayim. Many mefarshim learn that's why we say shiro chadosho shibchu geulim al sfas hayam. That the shiro was a shiro chadosho, even beyond what Avraham Avinu saw. Because the extent of the Hashgocha was the first time. And this was witnessed by millions of people. So creation was in Mitzrayim and on the Yam and beyond, witnessed by millions of eyewitnesses. who recorded this in eyewitness testimony, which was written down and studied and passed down through generations. And the Seder is a very appropriate time because here, you know, Jews all over the world are doing this tonight, whether they're religious, whether they're not. Some just have, some got matzah and bread on the table, they face what they have there, you know, but everybody's doing something. They're sitting around, they're talking. And this has been going on for thousands of years without any hefsik, all over, wherever there are Jews, throughout the world, at the same time, the same day. It's mind-boggling. Then you're talking about billions of people who have participated, I think, I don't know, hundreds of millions, I don't know how to count. But in this process over the millennia, and it's the same story. Take a Haggadah from 100 years ago, and take a Haggadah from 200 years ago, and maybe find the Haggadah from 300 years ago. Same story. I once brought the Ethiopian chief rabbi many years ago to speak for a group of people here. Same story. They were separated for close to 2,000 years. And same story. A couple of minhagim, whatever, but and this is so they have to see this, and when they hear this at the Seder, it goes in. So they know that there are miracles. Now, very important and to use to connect at the Seder, Maimon Har Sinai. Where does the Seder come? Like they say, like a Yovan in Sukkah. Where does the Maimon, where does Shavuos come into Pesach? You know, where does Maimon Har Sinai come into? So there's a few opportunities. By the first Seder, I would say the opportunity. Ilu Kerevonu, Ilu Hotzionu Mimitzrayim, and then it goes to the end. V'loi Nosan Lo Nos HaTorah. What's that all about? You know, Dayenu. So we explain, you know, the Vilna Goyen explains this. Dayenu means Dayenu Lohidus. It would have been enough to be thankful for, even if he just took us out of Israel. But what did he give us? He took us to Har Sinai, and this same group of people who identified Hashem, and this is maximum identification in their lives because they just experienced the Seder, who identified Hashem as the creator in Mitzrayim by all the miracles that they all witnessed. And you describe some miracles, describe light and darkness in the same room, water and blood drinking from the same glass, all these things, you know, and they go the beautiful Midrashim, and then this, they recognize Hashem, and then he brought them to Har Sinai, and he said, Rabbi Yisai, I'm going to reveal to you the purpose for all of this. And now we're going to find out what it's all about. Why did I do this? I wasn't having fun. I wasn't charging admission for the show. This is real. So he brought us to Har Sinai, and he gave us the key to understanding what this is all about. That's an opportunity. And then just a little bit about how Maimon Har Sinai, what happened. Hashem introduced himself. He said, Hashem Lekecha. Remember me? Remember the guy who did all those miracles over there that you identified as the creator? Now I'm going to tell you why I did it. This is what I expect. This is how to lead a good life. This is how you can earn the maximum benefit in this world and beyond. This is so, and this again in front of millions of eyewitnesses who took the testimony and they wrote it down and they passed it down. Every parent to his children throughout the generations, father to son throughout the doiros, and this is the same Torah that we have today. Now, even at a young age, they get something. And especially when it starts at the Seder. I would say that the second night, there's also an opportunity to focus from Yitzias Mitzrayim to Maimon Har Sinai. And that is Sfiras HaOmer. Second night, they say Sfiras HaOmer. If you're most, I don't know if they do it today anymore, but in the old Haggadahs, for some reason, maybe because of the women, they used to have Sfiras HaOmer after the Seder. You see something there about counting Sfira, and maybe they still have it there. Like everybody counted Sfira in Shul. I don't know what they had in mind. I guess maybe, maybe. All right. What? Chassidim definitely do it there, really?
They don't do it earlier.
Really? They wait until after the Seder. Okay. Yes, so they can't count Sfira too. So they can't count Sfira. Oh, so they want to make sure they didn't miss. Ooh, very good. Okay, I always wonder why it could be. Very good. Anyway, whatever it is. So Sfira Sfira, what are we doing? We're counting the days to Kabbalah Satoira. Because this event is the seminal event in all of world history. That the Creator, not only in Mitzrayim, identified himself as the Creator, but He brought us to Har Sinai, and he revealed himself as the one who you saw as the creator. Now I'm telling you the purpose for creation. I'm communicating with you directly. Not only am I communicating with you, I'm speaking directly to Moshe Rabbeinu in front of the entire nation, all hearing. So they should believe in Moshe forever. And this is what we look forward to. This is something. And then you could even say, we look forward to it with such excitement because this is what separates us from all the nations of the world. Because all the nations of the world want to claim divine revelation, only claim private revelation. Private. In the midst of a dream at night, walking on the road to Damascus, in an upstate, I'm referring to different religions, in a room upstate New York, where an angel came and brought him the book of whatever, you know. Anyway, and the only ones who preceded all of them, who say, what do you mean? Hashem appeared to us publicly. We have eyewitnesses. We have a recorded document. And we pass it down generation to generation. And with all the copycat religions that they copied so much from Judaism, nobody ever dared to copy this claim. Why do you think that's true? And one little kid over there will say, well, you can't copy this claim. If it didn't happen, you can't get away with it. Because you can't say millions of people saw something that they didn't see. So you can't speak directly to them and say it. So this, and then there's one more nakuda which could be added to, which is just, but again, see, I get very excited about this. I've been saying this for years, and I still get very excited about it. It's probably the 900th time that I've said this, and I still get excited about it. But calm the excitement, because the more matter of fact it is, the less the defense mechanisms go up. You know, when you talk like this, some people, oh no, take it easy, don't do a number on me, you know, you're not going to brainwash me. But when you do it, you know, and there's something else that's very interesting, you know what I find to be very interesting? That the document that they wrote, when we read the document, it doesn't say, these are the events that took place. It says, we saw these events. And the difference is telling. Because if I say to you, let's say you trust me 100%, and I say to you, this is what happened. The only thing that you know is that I believe that this is what happened. I wouldn't lie, and I said this is what happened, so you know that I believe this is what happened. But if I wouldn't lie to you, and I say I saw this, the only thing you can say is I'm Meshuga. So then when I bring another 2 or 3 million people together, that's already hard to say, you know, that everybody, there is nobody there who didn't know it. And this eyewitness testimony of written in the, because the Torah talks about, you saw, you heard, you remember what you saw. It's all the lashon of the Torah is clearly that the generation that gave it over are giving over their own eyewitness testimony. And when this was passed down from every father, now imagine saying, if you want, you can add one more nekuda. You know, parents don't lie to their children. Fine, that's a hard one today. Kids are not so sure. But anyway, that's besides the point. So go soft on that one. But every Jewish parent telling the same lie to their children, that can't be. That's more definite, more, that's clear, that's a stronger argument than parents don't lie to their children. Everybody, the older. And the document is read, and again, and you see what happens in shul if a bakur even makes a mistake in the reading, how they jump on him, and this, and so now you had at the seder with the props, with the clear message of Hashem as the Creator, you have the opportunity to introduce, and every year, even if it's only at the seder, and it's only just, but it's worth it. This talk eventually, the kid is 8, the kid is 9, the kid is 10, and then of course, the if you can get the kid to participate in the process, and for next year you have him make a presentation about it, and you prepare him, you give him a little speech, and he says, and this, the best way to convince yourself of anything is to convince somebody else. You know, there's no question about it, that's the most powerful. And so this is, again, but these things cannot be taken for granted. Okay, so these are just a few of the, what I think some of the basic principles. Now, I think that, just to maybe wrap it up a little bit, that when we have this, then we have certainly a much stronger basis to inspire bitochon in our children, because they know about Hashgacha Pratis. They know about Hashem's involvement. They have a sense of Hashem's grandeur and magnificence in this world. They have a sense of Him identifying Himself as the Creator in front of eyewitnesses, and they have Ben Franklin's formula of tell me, show me, and involve me, which they all experience at the Seder. And we took it a step further and took it to Maimon Har Sinai with the Dayenu and with the Sfira Soimer. So they really got, you know, over a period of time. And Bechlal, it's good to be patient. If you shove it all down their throat in one session, the only thing they will do is, and I'd rather not say the word, in polite company, okay? Anytime you force something down someone's throat, you know what's going to happen. So, but gradually, be patient. You'll have Shavuos, you'll have a chance to reinforce it again. You know, Sukkos is another chance to reinforce it again. Also miracles of the Midbar and how they lived, and Hashgacha Pratis and Bitochen, because the Sukkah represents Bitochen. We leave the security of our homes. Okay, but with all of this now, we have an opportunity to begin to develop a Bitochen, because they have a sense of all the ingredients that are prerequisites, so to speak, to be able to put our trust in Hashem. But there's something else I think that's very important. The Bitochen is what can cement all of this together. Why? And I think the reason for that is as follows. Because all of these things, the human being in me, the material being in me, the goof in me, wants satisfaction in life. We want pleasure. We want fulfillment. We want what we want. We want the fulfillment of our desires. Bitochon, built upon a deep emuna in Hashem and knowledge of His Hashgacha Pratis and knowledge of all of His powers. And I've neglected to mention Mitzrayim. We saw power. I mean, creation, but that means the power of creation. That was not Shaykh, the control of everything. So He has all of the ingredients. Now when I translate that into a Bitochon, so I have now used all of this information that you've given me to be able to get a new bicycle, get a new car, get a new this, get a better mark on my test, whatever it may be. And that's critical, because that becomes the motivation not to let it go and not to soften up on it and not to forget it and not to ignore it and not to rebel against it, because I need it. Because all of this that you've given me, which I've heard, and as a younger kid, especially before the taivis sets in, and before bar mitzvah, it's much easier, because that's when the taivis begin, and they want this and they want that. Well, today it's much earlier, but even so, you know, as it goes on. But now I have, hey, this, all of this is a means to get things in this world. You know, I really want a lot of money. Do I? Bitoch. You know, I really need this. I really want this. I really want that. Hashem gets involved. Put your trust in Him. So this can enhance the Bitochen in Hashem. And if they know that through Bitochen in Hashem, they're entitled to get, and they're capable of getting so much, then one more piece kicks in too. And that's the piece that says, Tefillah is a way to inspire Bitochen. I ask Hashem, and Hashem responds with Rachmonis, and even at the point where He's not yet ready to respond, but if I inspire myself with Bitochen, I bring the desired results closer and closer. And the truth of the matter is that is, the Goyin says in Avni Eliyahu, on this parsha, we just read it Shabbos, Yaakov says to Yosef, Re'oi ponecho loy pilolti. And Rashi's pilolti, that loshen means, Rashi says, loy mulani libi lachshuv. It's like a positive machshova. I never allowed myself to think positively, optimistically, that I'd ever see Yosef again. That's what he says to Yosef. The Goyin says that's the sherish of the word tefillah. Tefillah is from the pilolti. I don't know exactly how it, but the Goyin says that's the sherish. And the pshat is like this, because tefillah inspires that sense of hope. Why am I standing in front of my? Why am I? Who am I praising? The one who's capable. Who am I asking? The one who responds. And in the process, I'm developing a greater sense of hope, a greater sense of trust. So now the tefillah becomes more important also, because this is a means of getting things, and it's a means of, even with the delayed reaction of tefillah, of strengthening my bitochon, so I become more and more worthy of getting. And then, if you take it one step further, and you quote, which I'm sure we have quoted in the past, the Orach Chaim HaKodesh, that says, when, by the Yam Suf, where they're surrounded by the Yam Suf here, and Paro here, and the wild animals here, and Moshe Rabbeinu cries to Hashem, and Hashem says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Ma titzak elai, Dabra bnei Yisrael biso, why are you calling to me? And the Orach Chaim says, to whom should he call? Like, what kind of talk is that? So the Orach Chaim says there was a kitrik, something that because of what happened in Mitzrayim, the Avodah Zorah, whatever, it's not clear, maybe it is clear, I don't remember exactly, it says the tefillah couldn't be answered. The sultan had a right to interfere with the tefillah. But there's a koyach that can override that. And that's the koyach of their emunah bitochen. Show your emunah, show your bitochen. Go right into that Yam Suf, and that will help where tefillah fell short. So Mimele, we come full circle with the basis of Hashem's Hashkocha right down to the bitochon, which can be developed through the tefillah and can help us to achieve beyond the tefillah. And I'd just like to conclude with one word. If you think that this is a cheap approach, you underestimate the human condition. The genius, in my opinion, and it's not for me to say, it's a terrible word, please forgive me, of tefillah, the genius of tefillah is that Hashem created a way that we can forge a relationship with Him with the gashmius and the materialism that means so much to us. So He brings the whole being on board. If tefillah is only about ruchnius, so okay, my body is craving for everything else, and ruchnius, I connect to Hashem. So I have a piece of me that connects, the soul connects, and the body pulls in different directions. Tefillah says, you want to get, you want your food, you want your health, you want your wisdom, you want your success in business, you want this, you want that. You know where you get it? From your relationship with me. From talking to me. Oh. So the genius of tefillah is that incorporates the entire human existence in the process of connecting to Hashem. So we should not be concerned about belittling or insulting the ruchnius of the Torah by using it to get the things that we want, because ultimately that's the way we are, and that's what Hashem wants. Hashem wants to be Mahana Us. He created the world to do chesed, the ultimate chesed, of course, we know, but He wants every other chesed along the way too. And the only thing that interferes with that is the question of whether or not we've earned it, and that's part of the system of His chesed, that to have us earn things so we can really appreciate it.